Hello, crackheads. You're listening to Paranormal Cracktivity, the only podcast where you can find both paranormal and cracktivity. I'm Justin.
And sadly, I am Dreek.
Why is that so sad? I thought I wished I could be Dreek. It seems great to be Dreek.
You know, I said sadly because they were probably expecting someone else instead of.
No, there's never going to be anybody but us ever.
Maybe.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Well, I am so excited to be here back with you guys and back with you, Dreek. How are you doing? How are you doing today, Dreek?
How am I doing today? I'm doing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. That's what I like to hear.
I may not be doing it well, but I am definitely doing it.
Well, how was your holidays?
How was my holidays? It was fun. Spent time with family. Went to Mexico. That was fun.
Very fun.
Seeing you for New Year's. That was really fun. We had a blast and a half.
Oh, yeah.
And then I started back work.
Mm-hmm.
This break was not long enough.
Yeah, I feel that. Well, I had a good Christmas break, too. I was also spending time with family. Did not go to Mexico. But I did get a lot of books for Christmas that I've been reading, and I'm really excited to read. So
that's one of my New Year's resolutions, is to read more.
That's a great resolution.
I'm going to try and get on that bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I just finished The Butcher and the Wren.
Oh!
It was such a good read. Hats off Amazing. To Elena. Shout out Morbid Podcast. Shout out. If y'all want to collab...
Hit us up. Or if you just want to be friends.
I feel like I could be friends with both of them.
Oh yeah.
Drink or something.
All right. Well, I am really excited to see what we're gonna get into today. What are we gonna talk about, Jake?
We are talking about something that is not very paranormal, but very cracktivity.
Ooh, okay, we're switching it up. I'm excited.
Yeah, we're switching it up all the way. We're shifting gears. I wanted to do something that was a little different, but still in the realm of, you know, the true crime and the killing and stuff that we love so much.
Right.
We are going to be discussing the life and the crimes of Pablo Escobar.
Oh, whoa. Oh, I'm excited. Okay.
Yeah. I found out a lot about Pablo and this little research thing that I did. And I hope you find out something that you did not know about Pablo Escobar, because everything I knew about Pablo Escobar was a lie.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, I'm excited. I honestly don't know pretty much anything, so I'm excited to hear about it.
So let's jump right in. Pablo Escobar was born on December 1st, 1949, in Colombia, as the third of seven children. His father was a farmer and his mother was a school teacher. During this time in Colombian history, there was a civil war going on in Colombia. So while Pablo was growing up, he saw violence as a boy in the city of Medellin. This time was considered la violencia, or the violence. And la violencia was a 10-year civil war in Colombia from 1948 to 1958. That was between the Colombian Conservative Party and the Colombian Liberal Party. And La Violencia is estimated to have cost the lives of at least 200,000 people. And at that time, that was almost 2% of Colombia's population at the time.
Oh, wow.
I really couldn't find much else about his childhood that mattered to our talking about him. So that's all I have about his childhood. And we just go right into his teenage years.
All right.
So as a teenager, he was expelled from school and soon began participating in petty crimes. In the earlier years of his crimehood, he would steal tombstones and chisel off the names and resell them.
Oh, that sounds like somebody else that we know.
I know. Who are you thinking, Justin?
I am thinking of Mr. Bonnie, or Mr. Clyde.
Mr. Clyde.
Let me do that again.
Yes, I'm thinking of Mr. Clyde. I guess that was just a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I had never heard of that until we did our Bonnie and Clyde episode, so I'm surprised to hear about it again here, but
Who is buying tombstones from random people? And what are you doing with those tombstones? You're going to steal from the dead to give back to another dead? Anyway.
You got to be super haunted after that kind of work.
Absolutely. And we'll find out later that, yeah, he was pretty haunted.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
He would also steal cars with other thieves, sell the parts for money, or he would forge high school diplomas. After that wasn't really, like, scratching his itch, he began to sell marijuana. Escobar soon became involved in more violent crimes after he began starting to sell marijuana. He would employ criminals to kidnap people who owed him money and demand ransoms. His most famous kidnapping from this time was a businessman named Diego Echevarria. And Escobar received $50,000 in ransom from the Echevarria family. But he was eventually killed in the summer of 1971 when Escobar was only 21 years old.
Oh, wow.
So this is, like, crazy. Because it's just, like, at the age of 21, he just has no remorse for killing. Which is very scary.
Yeah, that's so young.
And we'll see in this case that money truly is the root of all evil, especially when it comes to Pablo Escobar. Like, money is the root of all evil. In the mid-1970s, Escobar realized that he could make more money by selling and distributing cocaine in Colombia, because during this time, cocaine, or coke, was being grown and processed in Peru, Bolivia, and Chile, which were all neighbors of his home country of Colombia. Another benefit from living in Colombia was that he had easy access to the Caribbean islands, which made it easier to smuggle drugs into the USA via Florida. He got his start in the coke drug business by driving coca paste to laboratories in Medellin, Colombia. In 1975, at the age of 20, let's see, at the age of 26, he was able to graduate to drug smuggling. At that time, cocaine was worth $35,000 a kilo, which is right now $193,678.16 in 2002.
Whoa.
I don't even know what a kilo looks like.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I don't even know how much that is. Like,
how much is a kilo? If you know, let us know by emailing us at
paranormalcreativitypodcast@gmail.com.
Or shoot us a DM at
paranormalcreativitypodcast
on Instagram. So after working with an American flight coordinator, Escobar became a millionaire by only making a few flights from Colombia to the Caribbean and then to the U.S.
Well, dang, he should have stopped right there.
You know what? Some would think after you just made, like, one trip of just,
yeah,
like,
right,
shipping cocaine, you got a million, you're a millionaire.
No more tombstones for him.
Definitely. No more tombstones for him right now.
Oh, okay.
So, often the weight of the cocaine that was on the plane was twice the weight of the plane that was carrying it. Pilots who were willing to make this trip for Escobar could make $1 million per flight.
Whoa.
Exactly. With his new money, he bought a large estate that he named Hacienda Napoles. And here's a fun fact. I already knew about Pablo Escobar's house because it had a zoo. And he treated his animals really well, but don't quote me on that. But he had a zoo, and also on the property, he possessed a car that once belonged to Al Capone.
Whoa, that's so interesting. Was this, I'm sorry, was this like a public zoo that people come and visit his house?
You know, I don't think so because he was literally dealing drugs.
Right. I wouldn't think so either. But then again, I mean, you gotta... maybe he was a nice neighborhood man. He was like letting all the little kids come over and pet the animals.
You know, he was really fond of his hippos, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think he was really fond of his hippos.
Okay. Interesting.
By this time, he was 32 years old, and he was making $500,000 a day.
Whoa.
$500,000 a day. So, just solely off the fact that he was a really good drug dealer. In 1981, he partnered with some cocaine dealers in the Medellin area. None of them were as powerful or as rich as Pablo Escobar. With his partners, they became known as the Medellin Cartel. With this new strategy of partnership, Pablo was now making $1 million a day.
Whoa.
Exactly. What are you doing with $1 million a day? Like, I'm just... This is a question for Jeff Bezos. Mm-hmm. Why do you need more money? Give me a little bit, some of that money. So, drugs were not the only thing that the Medellin cartel was known for. They had a reputation of extraordinary violence. Anyone who openly disagreed with Escobar or came in the way of him having money either ended up missing or dead.
Oh no.
Of course, Pablo wasn't the one killing these people. He had hired a gang that would snuff anyone he wanted them to, that he wanted him to, with no questions asked. It got to the point where if he needed to kill one man and he couldn't do it easily, he would just kill the whole family, spouse and children.
Oh my goodness.
So that's if ruthless. You like, if it was difficult for Pablo to get his like hands on you, he'd just kill your whole family.
Wow.
Like, okay. While I was researching this, I was scared of him. He's a very scary person. Even though he seemed not to give a care about any other people's lives or family, he cherished and loved his probably more than he loved himself. There was one time that he was talking to his wife on the phone, and a man could be heard screaming in the background. Escobar yells to the person he is in the room with to keep the man quiet so that way he can speak to his wife and his children.
Oh.
So he's in the room with somebody getting probably the life taken away from them. And he's like, y'all are being rude. I'm trying to talk to my wife and kids. Can you like keep it down?
Oh, wow.
Good job, Pablo.
Good job, Pablo. I mean, A-plus husband.
I'd give him a C-plus. Or a B-minus.
Okay, a B-minus.
When you're making $1 million a day.
That's what I'm saying. And then he puts everything on hold just to answer that phone call.
We'll talk about it. Escobar did his fair share of illegal things, but the people of Medellin viewed him as a saint, even if the authorities could not stand him. He would give food to the poor people of the community, and he even built a church and a few schools in Medellin. Not only did he build a church and schools, but he also built over 200 homes for people to live in, soccer fields, power lines, and roads.
Oh, wow.
The people loved him because he was doing way more than the Colombian government was doing to help his people. With this now Robin Hood-esque lifestyle, he felt like he could do more to help the people and obtain more power by running for office. And in 1982, he was elected to the Colombian Congress.
Are you for real?
Dead as a doorknob. I mean,
oh my goodness.
That was a wrong
Is that?
Serious as a heart attack. Not dead, but serious.
Got you. I got you. That's crazy. I did not know that.
Well, it's probably because he's out here helping the community and doing things for the community. Mm-hmm. But he's also killing everyone that gets in the way of his money.
Right. So I don't know how. I guess they weren't scared of him. They didn't need to be scared of him if they weren't getting in his way, but
yeah, I don't know. I mean, just stay on his good side. I mean, yeah. I would.
Yeah, I guess. But how do you know if you're staying on his good side, you know?
The first way to do that is don't do drugs.
Okay, there we go.
Don't do crack, kids. Do not do crack.
I feel like if I was living there, I would just, like, I don't know, I would turn in front of him in the street or something, and then that would be it for me and my family. I would just be terrified all the time.
I'd get on a horse and I'd leave.
Yeah, me too.
In 1982, the same year that he was elected for Colombian Congress, Reagan was in office, and he made a campaign promise to get rid of drugs in America. We love a Reagan. If you're not following so far, Escobar at that time was supplying most of the cocaine in America. Escobar sent a man to America to buy 1,300 barrels of ether. Now, I didn't know what ether was when I started doing research, and ether is a key part of turning coca into cocaine.
Oh.
Not really sure how that process works, but you needed ether. And so he sent someone to get 1,300 barrels of it. The people who ended up selling Escobar these barrels of ether were actually undercover DEA agents. And before shipping them off, they hid tracking devices in all the barrels.
Oh.
This would lead them to the forests of Colombia. Now, the reason why they put tracking devices on these barrels of ether was because no one needs that much ether unless you're making cocaine. So after putting the tracking devices on those 1,300 barrels of ether, this led them to the forests of Colombia, more specifically to the lab that Escobar had built to manufacture and distribute cocaine. Now, the only way to this laboratory was either by boat or on foot, or another way. What are some ways you can travel through the forest? On a dirt bike?
Oh, that sounds like pretty much it to me. On boat or maybe a mountain bike, yeah.
Yeah.
Mountain bike.
Because there were no roads that led to this laboratory. It was just a laboratory in the middle of the forest.
Wow. He typically got there by boat or like helicopter or something, because
helicopter. That's mm-hmm. another way. With the help of the USDEA, the anti-narcotics police in Colombia set off to raid the laboratory, and it took them over 2 hours to get to this location because, like I said, there were no roads and you had to either fly or go there by boat. When they got to the location, they found that there were over 14 tons of cocaine.
Whoa.
That was worth over $1 billion.
Whoa.
After days of searching, they found more cocaine and airplane landing strips to the laboratory. This was the biggest drug bust in the history of the world at the time.
Uh-huh.
The head of the drug sting operation, Jaime Ramirez, couldn't believe the extent to which the Medellin cartel was manufacturing and distributing cocaine. This is when someone showed up at Ramirez's front door and said that if he pulled his forces out and stopped looking into the shady drug dealings, there would be a multi-million dollar payout for him.
Oh.
So in response, Ramirez lit the place on fire. And if you don't know, ether is highly flammable, so the laboratories just went up in flames. While they were setting the fires, authorities came across what looked like a death wish list.
Okay, wait, okay. I got confused for a second. Did the DEA, are they the ones that set it on fire, or was it somebody else?
The Colombian government. So the head of the drug sting operation was Jaime Ramirez, who was a Colombian official.
Right, and they were the one who offered him. Was he the one that was offered the payout?
Yes, so Jaime Ramirez offered the payout to take his men out and just, like, turn a blind eye to the drugs that were, like, being distributed from this location. And he was like, yeah, I'm going to light this place on fire. So he lit it on fire.
Oh, my goodness.
But
that's
the way
crazy.
He was able to find the location was with those tracking devices that the USDEA agents put in the barrels.
Oh, wow. Oh, right. That's crazy. But I am still so confused about why he burned it. Like,
just being mean. Because
Escobar seems like very irresponsible. Because then there's no evidence that.
I don't know. Escobar was like, if you take your people out, I'll give you more than $1 million. And he was like, oh, he wants to test me. I'm gonna light his stuff on fire. He just lit it on fire. Which, I mean, hindsight, lighting something in fire in the forest.
Yeah, all that stuff,
But you have to also think, their forests probably aren't dry.
Yeah, tropical forests.
So it probably didn't spread like a wildfire in California would spread, I would imagine.
Yeah, you're probably right, yeah. It's still sad to think about all those coca leaves that, like, just got burned up.
They don't like coca leaves anymore.
And the chemicals, the ether out there, that probably just burned for, like, months in the forest and you know, polluted the water. I'm sorry. It's just, whatever.
This is, like, environment!
He's, like, the hero of the story, and I'm like, put this man behind bars.
The environment! So, yeah, okay, so I'm that sorry. Was the biggest drug bust in history.
Wow.
And, like I said, Ramirez could not believe that the Medellin cartel was manufacturing and distributing cocaine to this extent.
Mm.
So, after finding that death wish list, Ramirez's name was on the top of that list. Escobar also had the new Minister of Justice, Rodrigo Lara Bonilla, on that list. At this point, the cartel was so powerful that the Colombian government didn't have the resources to protect Lara Bonilla from getting killed.
Wow.
Because they all knew he was on the death wish list, but they didn't have the resources to protect him at the time.
And he's on Congress. So what are they going to do?
Well, we'll see.
Oh, gosh.
While in Congress, Lara Bonilla had become Escobar's opponent and enemy. He accused Escobar of criminal activity from the very first day that he stepped foot in Congress.
Mm.
One of Escobar's arrests in 1976 was investigated by Lara Bonilla's subordinates. And a few months later, liberal leader Luis Carlos Galan expelled Pablo Escobar from the party.
Oh, wow.
Although Escobar fought back, he announced his retirement from politics in January of 1984. Even though he was not in Congress anymore, he was still controlling politics in Colombia. He would bribe politicians to work in his favor, and if the politicians didn't want to deal with Escobar and his shady dealings, he would make them take the money and threaten to kill them if they didn't take the bribe. 3 months after Escobar's retirement, Lara Bonilla was gunned down by children while he was in his car.
No.
The children were using military-grade machine guns.
Oh my gosh. Now, you can't tell me that he was doing... This man is just a murderer, you know? I know that he was loved by all these people for like doing all these things and making all these changes, but like that's crazy.
You are right. You are definitely right. So after the death of Lara Bonilla, Escobar was indicted on charges of murder, but he never stood trial. He fled to Central America, where he would be safe from persecution. After Lara Bonilla's death, Colombia began to crack down on cocaine production in the country and eventually raided the hacienda that Escobar owned. So the one that we talked about with the zoo and the hippos.
Oh, the hippos.
As we all know, Pablo Escobar fled to Central America. So when they did raid it and found drugs, coke, and guns, Escobar was nowhere to be found. While staying in Central America, he was able to bribe the governments of Panama, Nicaragua, and Cuba to help him find new routes to transport cocaine across borders and into the United States.
Whoa.
So remember at the beginning when I was like, money is the root of all evil?
Uh-huh.
He bribed three countries to help him mass produce and mass distribute coke. Wow. He didn't like bribe like companies or like family. He bribed entire countries to help him with this operation.
Wow.
While all of these drug deals were going on in these countries, there was an American pilot named Barry Seal that was at the center of it. He was one of the most successful drug smugglers, and he worked with Escobar for a very long time. Anytime he flew a load for Escobar, he was paid $1 million. So some way, somehow, the U.S. government found out that Barry was flying drugs into the U.S. And instead of serving jail time for his involvement, he agreed to be an informant for the American government.
Oh.
In 1985, Barry was able to find out that the Nicaraguan government had gifted Escobar a piece of military landing strip. Escobar then hired Barry to transport 18,000 pounds of cocaine paste to the U.S. So the U.S. officials were able to send Barry to Nicaragua to pick up the shipment. And when they did, they had installed a camera on board that caught Escobar loading cocaine paste into the plane with Nicaraguan soldiers helping him.
Oh.
When this information made it to the White House, Pablo Escobar had become an internationally wanted criminal, and the Nicaraguan government was plastered as having their economy being supported by international drug trafficking.
I'm sorry, you said the Nicaraguan government was plastered.
I mean, they were helping him. The government was literally helping him transport cocaine.
They might as well have been plastered. They probably were on the cocaine.
You had to have been because... And I'll post pictures on the Instagram of this. But when Barry had landed and they started loading cocaine and coca paste onto the plane, Barry had to press a button to manually take the pictures. And when he was taking the pictures, he could hear the click of the camera. And so did Pablo Escobar.
Oh, no.
And everyone that was there. Because the camera, I guess, was supposed to be in a soundproof box on the plane, like hidden.
Oh.
But when he went to take the pictures, everyone could hear the click. Oh, no. And so what he did, thinking quite fast and trying to save his life, he turned on the plane so that way the sound of like the engine running would mask the sound of the clicking.
Uh-huh.
It's just crazy. It's just really crazy.
Yeah.
And Reagan made a PSA to the American people explaining how Nicaragua was supporting drug trafficking internationally.
Mm.
So Nicaragua was in trouble. Very much in trouble with the rest of the world.
Mm.
In February of 1986, Barry was staying in a Salvation Army halfway house. And a four-man hit team found him and killed him on U.S. soil.
Oh, no. They weren't children, were they?
They weren't children, no.
Oh, thank goodness.
The killing of an American on American soil by Colombian men made the American government and the American people outraged.
Mm.
the U.S. planned to extradite Escobar to the USA to face trial. Escobar said that he would rather be in a grave in Colombia than a cell in America. And the reason for this was because he couldn't bribe anyone in America, because our justice system at the time was a lot.
because of Reagan.
You know what? Because of Reagan. So he said he'd rather be in a cell in a grave in Colombia than a cell in America. Which I'm like, sis, you killed a lot of people.
Right.
You deserve it. Mm-hmm. You deserve to be in a cell, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah.
With this in mind, he had planned to take over the country of Colombia, so that way he did not have to go to America to face trial.
Okay, big moves.
To do this, he was able to take hostage of all of the Colombian justices, and he slaughtered half of them.
Okay.
He also bombed a newspaper's headquarters.
Oh.
This killed 10 people.
Okay, there's no way that there's people supporting him still. After all this, like,
we'll see, Justin. We'll see.
Oh my goodness.
So the reason why he bombed the newspaper's headquarters is because they had published something that basically said that Pablo Escobar was killing people. And so he killed them. In 1989, Luis Galan, the person who had kicked Escobar out of the Colombian Liberal Party a few minutes ago. In 1989, he was running for president of Colombia, and he ran his campaign based on ending the cartel in Medellin, Colombia. He was on a campaign parade in the city of Soacha, or Soacha, on the night of August 18th, when he was shot while walking on stage to give a speech to 10,000 people.
Oh no.
10 others were injured, and Galan passed away. He was only 45 years old.
Wow.
On November 27th, 1989, Escobar planted a bomb on a flight in an attempt to assassinate Galan's successor, Cesar Gaviria Trujillo. Now, Cesar missed the plane and he survived. But the other 107 people who were on the plane were killed by the bomb.
Oh my goodness.
Two Americans were killed in the process. So now the American government is like, yeah, we want you, Escobar.
Mm-hmm.
And me, I say, go get him.
Yeah.
Go get him.
Go get him.
So things are starting to get dangerous, and the Colombian government is trying to settle tensions between the cartel and the actual government of the country. In June of 1991, Colombia's new president, Gaviria Trujillo, which Escobar tried to kill, ended up changing the Colombian constitution to eliminate extradition to another country. So the reason why I think he did this was because, number one, he did not want to be killed by Pablo Escobar. And number two, he was trying to settle tensions. But some people think that Trujillo was bribed. This was good for Escobar and other cartel members, because that meant that they did not have to get persecuted in the U.S. for the murders of the Americans, for all the Americans he's killed so far.
Right. Right.
I would have changed the Constitution for a man who literally tried to kill me. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I have to wonder, like, if he had some kind of other thought process too, you know, like he wanted to enact justice on Pablo Escobar rather than, you know, extraditing him to the United States or something like that.
I don't know. But with this, we know that Pablo Escobar cray-cray.
Right.
He's cray-cray.
Mm-hmm.
So on the same day that the Colombian Congress voted to forbid extradition in the country's new constitution, Escobar surrendered and was subsequently jailed.
Oh, wow.
His imprisonment, however, had little effect on his criminal activities and his lifestyle. He was allowed to build his own prison.
No.
Which became known as La Catedral, and he had to serve 5 full years.
Are you kidding me? The cathedral? Yeah. Okay. 5 full years. 4 years.
In a prison that he built on his land.
Okay. Wow.
So La Catedral overlooked the city of Medellin and was a way for the government to be his security from his rivals. So at the time, there was a cartel that was directly competing with Escobar's drug trafficking and drug trade. And a lot of people wanted Pablo Escobar dead. And so he knew that if he built his prison and had the Colombian government be his security, that he would be safe 100% of the time. And the guards joked that La Catedral was not a maximum security prison, but it was a maximum comfort prison. While he was locked up in La Catedral, he was still able to run his drug smuggling business, and he often had parties in the prison every week.
Wow.
After he brought 4 of his lieutenants to the prison to murder them over a drug dispute, the Colombian government was like, nah, sis, you pushing it. The Colombian government finally decided that they wanted to have Escobar transported to a regular prison. He was not having any of this, and he refused to have him and his men moved to a regular prison. The Colombian government then came and surrounded the prison. This, again, didn't matter because he was able to bribe 1/2 of the guards. So he snuck out the back and escaped.
Of course he did. What else would he do?
He snuck out the back and he escaped.
Of the back door that he built with, or that he, I'm sorry, he paid somebody to build.
Yeah, with his money on his land.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Escobar is on the run. And for the next 17 months, police officers carried out 11,000 search warrants.
Whoa.
Escobar had moved his family to Bogota. Ooh, that's bad. I'm just going to say Bogota. I'm so sorry if I offended you, if you're from Bogota. So Escobar had moved his family to Bogota for their safety. And he often talked to his family, but he tried not to talk more than 3 minutes at a time, because he knew that if he was talking for more than 3 minutes, then the police could pinpoint his location. He would often take taxi rides as he talked on the phone, because once the police were able to pinpoint the location, he would already be 5 to 7 miles ahead of them. On December 2nd, 1993, one day after his birthday, Colombian intelligence intercepted a phone conversation between Pablo Escobar and his son. They were able to pinpoint his location because he had stayed on the phone for more than 3 minutes. The police knew that Pablo knew not to stay on the phone for more than 3 minutes. So many people wonder why Escobar stayed on the phone for longer than 3 minutes. He was staying in a middle-class neighborhood in Medellin, and he had one bodyguard with him. Officers located Escobar, and a gunfire exchange occurred between the two forces. His bodyguard was shot and killed, and Escobar had made it to the roof of the house. He was hit by bullets in the torso and in the feet, and a bullet struck him in the air, killing him instantly. He was only 44 years old. Immediately after his death, the cocaine market became dominated by his rival cartel, the Cali Cartel, until the mid-1990s, when its leaders were either killed or jailed by the Colombian government. Many people in Medellin saw him as a Robin Hood, especially many of the city's poor people who Escobar had helped while he was alive. And a lot of these people mourned his death, and over 25,000 people attended his funeral. Some of them considered him a saint, and some of them would even often pray to him, asking to receive divine intervention or divine help.
Oh my gosh.
But before his death, he warned his wife not to come to the funeral or allowed their children to come to the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that he felt like it would be dangerous for them to be at the funeral. They still went, but they were heavily guarded. After his death, his wife tried to move to another country, but no country would grant his wife asylum because she was the widow of Pablo Escobar.
Oh, come on. After they paid him, basically, to export cocaine in their countries, they're not going to let his wife come in. That's...
She ended up in Argentina, and she worked under an assumed name as a real estate agent. But someone leaked that she was the widow of Pablo Escobar. She was jailed for 18 months while they checked her finances to make sure none of it came from illegal activities.
Oh my goodness.
Rival cartel members also made agreements with her about her and Escobar's son. They wanted to make sure that he did not grow up to try to avenge his father's death and join the drug trafficking ring. His son grew up to write a book about how it was living with his father, and his daughter chooses to stay out of the shadows of her father's drug trafficking life.
Mm.
That is a little bit just the tip of the iceberg of the life, crimes, and death of Pablo Escobar.
Wow. Talk about some cracktivity.
Talk about some cracktivity. Like, literally, cracktivity.
And I did not know half of that. I mean, the only thing that I knew about Pablo Escobar was from watching Narcos about 6 years ago, and I didn't finish it. So, and honestly, oh my goodness, it makes me so angry that he was killed, because he should have gone to jail for his whole life. I mean, that man was a serial killer.
Yeah, he really was. He killed a lot of people. He had a lot of people killed.
Yeah, I think he should have suffered. He shouldn't have gone to jail in Colombia. This whole story made me angry because, because, I mean, the governments were in a position that they couldn't stand up to him. All of them, you know? Which is infuriating, but that's just the way that it was.
Especially when he was able to bribe a lot of politicians and a lot of Colombian government officials.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's and Reagan is here saying that, you know, drugs are the problem. Obviously there's a bigger problem if drugs are taking over a whole group of countries, you know, like
Well, with that being said, would you like to guess the top song of December 2nd, 1993?
Oh my goodness.
I'm going to give you a hint. It's an artist or artists that I had never heard of before.
Oh, okay.
So they're probably white, Justin.
That was a good, yeah. I'm thinking that song, it's like, God Bless the Rains Down in Africa. Is that what it's called? You know that song?
Toto?
That one.
Africa by Toto? It was not Africa by Toto. I'll give you... That was strike one.
Okay.
I'll give you another hint. I think this person is a white man. And his name is a dish. A meat dish. A dish that is just meat.
I'm never gonna get it. Never gonna guess this one.
Think of all of the dishes that contain just meat. It's the name meat is in the name.
Meatloaf.
Good job, Justin. The artist was Meatloaf.
And are you?
Okay. I actually did a little research on Meatloaf, and he was pretty big.
Are you serious? I've never heard it.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, when I said Meatloaf, I really was kidding, and I didn't think I was going to get it.
So the name of the song was I'd Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That by Meatloaf.
Oh, that's fitting.
I'd do anything for love, but I won't do that. I'm pretty sure that's how the song goes.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've definitely heard that before.
Yeah, I've heard the song before. Didn't know a man named Meatloaf sung it.
Did not know a man named Meatloaf sung it.
He apparently had a good career.
Wow.
Not good enough.
All right. Yeah. Wow. That was a fun trivia fact. Good way to brighten the mood after all that.
So Meatloaf, if you want to come on the podcast, let me make sure he's still living before I invite him. Give me one moment as I look up whether or not Meatloaf is dead or not.
Join us next week on Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast when we communicate with the spirit of Meatloaf via Ouija board.
He's dead, actually. He died last year.
Oh, rest in peace. Last year. Oh, no. Was it? Oh, please don't tell me it was Miss Rona.
We could only assume. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to assume.
Well, Meatloaf, reach out to us if you're listening.
Actually, don't. Actually, don't. Do not reach out to us. But you know who should reach out to us, Justin?
Who should reach out to us?
Our listeners.
Our crackheads.
Our crackheads. Yeah. You can send us an email at paranormalcracktivity@gmail.com. Is that our email? Paranormalcracktivitypodcast@gmail.com. Yes. Or you can send us a DM on Instagram at
Paranormal Cracktivity Podcast.
We don't have a Twitter or a YouTube page.
We do not. If you want access to bonus content and early episodes, you can subscribe to our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/paranormalcracktivity.
And if you would like to suggest a case or have a story that you would like to tell to us and have us read on the podcast, send us an email.
Yes, please. We want to hear your stories.
And that is it.
That's all we have. Thank you guys so much for... I can't remember how we're supposed to end these things. Do you remember how we're supposed to end these things?
Don't do crack.
Don't smoke crack.
Don't smoke crack. Do not be like Pablo Escobar.
Don't be like Pablo Escobar. That's right.
He probably did crack 7 days out of the week. That's why he was killing everybody.
At least...
That's why he was killing everybody. He was literally, he was on crack.
Moral of the story. There we go, guys. Don't do crack.
Don't do crack.
And come back next week. Bye-bye.
Leo. As a heart attack.